Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest episode of the Blues on Parade podcast, where all we do is talk shit about Chelsea and talk shit about Chelsea. Again, some. Our slogan has remained the same the last couple weeks, hasn't it?
We can talk shit about everyone else, too, along with talking shit about Chelsea. So we can say, talk shit about Chelsea and talk shit about everyone else. I think we do that more. Because we do still talk shit about other teams.
Everyone else is winning, though. That's the problem.
Everyone else? I don't know. There's still some... as far as I know, it's a three-horse race, and the rest of the teams are losing. We can still make fun of Man United.
Yeah. The Man United score was hilarious.
Spurs... Well, actually, no. Spurs ended up winning. Never mind.
Spurs won.
They've had a couple embarrassing losses.
The ref decided not to blow the whistle until, 2 minutes after extra time in a Liverpool match to let them win.
Oh, come on.
What else? Hating. Arsenal destroyed. City played extremely well. I mean...
Wait, what? You mean Sheffield?
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal just...
Yeah, I think you said that they destroyed City. That's what you said.
Oh, no.
Wait, did that happen?
Yeah, definitely not. No, Arsenal. Yeah. I was out running errands today, and it's funny because I checked my phone, and I got like four up. I was in the middle of a conversation with somebody. I got four updates in a matter of minutes, and I checked my phone, and it's goal, all in like the first 19 minutes. It was 4-0 already. I'm like, geez, man. Yeah. And Saka couldn't even put up fantasy numbers, so I'm going to talk shit about him. His team scored 6 goals, and he only got one of them?
Or one assist. They gave him 2 assists in fantasy. The own goal, they gave him an assist. Don't worry, I know. I captained him like a fucking idiot. Got pulled at halftime. Didn't even get me that clean sheet bonus. Anyway, let's talk about this. I know how much we want to avoid the topic. Let's talk about this Brentford match.
Yeah, so Chelsea dropped points again. 2-2 to Brentford away at Brentford. We had a different look this time, Sam. It looked like a back three, Petrovic in goal. The back three consisted of Axel Disasi as the right center back, Trevor Chalaba as the playing in the middle there, Levi Colwill as a left center back, wing backs Gusto and Ben Chilwell, with Enzo and Caicedo partnering each other in the midfield per usual. Conor Gallagher deployed at what seemed like a pseudo 10. I mean, in the second half, it definitely was an 8. Cole Palmer and Nico Jackson up top. So, Pochettino did admit that the team was a little tired and that's why he deployed this back three, because he kind of wanted to protect Enzo and Caicedo because they were feeling a little leggy. Not like we brought back Casadei from loan, but that's beside the point. So I mean, what did you make of it, man? I mean, 3-5-2, like it, hate it, want to see more of it?
Well, first of all, we've been asking for this for weeks, so complaining about it now would be very hypocritical of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we are going to complain about it, obviously, because we are hypocrites. But I mean, I think the reasoning behind it was pretty obvious. We can't defend in the box like any crosses or anything. So I think the logic was add a third center back, we'll have more size there. Unfortunately, that did not help anything really. Like, we were still terrible at defending crosses, set pieces. It wasn't great. I mean, I think that bringing back Chalaba, you know, to play in the middle of a back three, of an inexperienced back three, is, I mean, I wouldn't say unfair to him. I would say that it, you know, if you're going to be critical about him, which I'm going to be right now, it is unfair because he hasn't played a single second this season, and now he's, you know, starting back-to-back matches because of injuries. I still like the idea. I think we're missing the personnel. I think when Badiashile comes back, you know, that it might look a little bit different then. Obviously, Thiago Silva, that playing in the middle of a back three, I think that's his, you know, calling card right now at this point in his career. But I still think that, I mean, I'm just talking about the defense right now, but like, you know, moving up, I mean, what did you think? I know we didn't really have any offensive players on the pitch, so which was kind of,
that was my frustration. My frustration was, if these guys are so tired, especially Enzo and Caicedo, who clearly looked like the most fatigued players on the pitch, why do you start them? We brought Cassidy back from loan. He's played 13 minutes in total for us, so he's basically suiting up, getting undressed at the end of games, and going home. And Conor Gallagher didn't start against Leeds, so you would assume that maybe if anybody had legs to run on, would have been Gallagher. I think the sensible solution would have been, maybe you play Gallagher next to Caicedo, throw another attacker on, I don't know, maybe Mudryk, who scored and against Leeds and got benched again the day after he scores. Like, for me, that was a frustration. But with the back three, Sam, in the first half, I think they did their job pretty well. Like, Ivan Toney's one of the more physical center forwards in the league, and they pretty much negated him for the majority of the game. I thought Chalobah did well on him, especially when he stepped into the midfield in possession. He played really well out of the back too. But, you know, you mentioned it, and it's like, out of all the good work we did in the first half in terms of defending well, their crowd was starting to chant against their team. Like, they were really there for the taking, right? But in the second half, like, defending those crosses in the run of play, it's a fucking disaster. Like, still, we have another center back in the box and we still somehow can't defend a cross. It doesn't make sense to me. But yeah, I mean, I guess my criticism of this whole 3-5-2 is like, yeah, sure, if all the players are fully healthy and fully fit, maybe you can get away with it. But to me, that's beside the point. Throw another attacker out there. If Brentford was missing all four of their starting defenders in that game, they were missing their whole defense. And basically playing a second, you know, a reserve team in terms of the back line. And we play two attackers? Make it make sense.
Yeah, and I didn't even see on the script that you had this question. At CFC Ronnie, he said, so glad Silva isn't playing to slow our play down. The three center halves playing on let Brentford score twice and hit the post twice. I mean, I think he's being sarcastic about
100%.
About Silva isn't playing to slow our play down. Yeah, I mean, that was the point that I was making. I think that replacing, I think a lot of our issues is, I see a lot of players ball watching as opposed to being like organized. And I think that a guy like Thiago Silva on the pitch helping with that organization is actually a very, very underrated aspect of his game. And I think it shows.
I think Thiago would have gotten run over by Ivan Toney. I don't think he would have helped at all in this game. I mean, listen, Ronnie's point would have been valid if we were defending well when Thiago Silva was playing for us this season. But the fact is that we weren't. We weren't playing well before. And yeah, maybe we're not playing well after, but thrusting Thiago Silva into this team isn't getting us a clean sheet. And I guess that's the point. Like, if you look at the first goal, the fullbacks let us down. They didn't track their man. And obviously, the three center backs couldn't deal with it. I think Caicedo was the one that made the tackle. And then De Sassi was just ball watching. Yeah. So even if you're playing in a back three, De Sassi's still the man to just kind of step in there and clear the lines there. And then in terms of the second goal, I mean, let's just acknowledge for a second that goal was fucking sick.
Yeah, it was a great goal. Yeah. But like, yeah, that was like the perfect, you know, like just it fell into the right place. He hit it perfect. Like literally it went like around Chalobah, around De Sassi, and the pass Petrovic. Like, it was hit perfectly where it's like,
can't do anything.
I'm going to be mad that it went in, but I watched the replay, like, I'm not kidding. I watched the replay like 5-6 times, like, trying to say, okay, whose fault was it? Oh, it's Gallagher is right there. Oh, but, you know, like, just trying to figure out whose fault was it, but I kind of just decided that it's no one's fault. Like, that was just a great play and, you know, obviously a little bit of luck.
He did have a lot of time to kind of set himself up for the overhead kick. I'm talking about just, like, the sheer quality of the finish was...
Yeah. I mean,
you see an overhead kick, even if it's against your team, and you just kind of... You got to kind of applaud it and hold your hat. But let's talk about the two attackers up top. I mean, you know, I honestly, I'm sticking with my point. I don't think Thiago Silva would have made any sort of difference in that back three. I thought in the first half they did their job to the T. Really didn't get anything from either forward player that Brentford, you know, Wissa or Tony, they weren't finding any space. You know, again, Trevor Chalobah did pretty well to kind of step into the midfield and cut things off there. Probably would have started De Zassi in the middle there, in the middle of that back three, just because he's sort of better at anticipating, especially when we're playing a high line. You know, he's better at anticipating play and kind of getting in front of the ball and whatnot, and Chalobah has a little bit more pace, but beside the point. The two attackers up top is what's frustrated me the most in this game. I mean, again, if our midfielders are tired, why are we starting both of them? Why not give Enzo a rest? Why not give... I mean, maybe not Caicedo. I think he's more crucial to the team at this point in time, but play Gallagher in Enzo's position, and for fuck's sake, play Mudryk. Like, Poch literally said last week after the Leeds match, oh, a guy like Mudryk needs time. You know, he needs to play. And then he benches his ass after he was probably one of our better players on a day. Took his goal really well against Leeds, by the way.
Dude, Pochettino's whole treatment and management of Mudryk this season has been very, very just like concerning.
I'd go he's one step further.
He's benched him after every goal that he scored.
Yeah. I mean, I'd even go one step further, Sam. I don't think it's just Mudryk. I think it's all of the young not all of them, but I'd say most of the young players have been mismanaged. Colwill at left back, yeah. Benching Mudryk, Madueke playing one game here, not seeing him for 4 or 5 matches, and then playing again. Like, Armando Broja, you know, yeah, like...
he hasn't even played. Has he even played at Fulham? I don't know.
No, it's the fucking disaster loan that our genius directors decided was a good idea. I mean...
Yeah, all of our loans have been pretty bad recently, honestly, but I don't know.
And the only loan that was good, we recalled the guy, and now he's not playing at Chelsea in Cassidy. Like, he was actually playing at Leicester and having a half-decent season. Was he playing? Yeah, he was playing. He wasn't starting, but he was coming off of their bench. He was pretty much getting minutes every match. And from what I've seen, like, he's looked pretty good. You know, he's developing well there. Better situation there than at Chelsea right now.
Yeah, I mean, besides obviously Cole Palmer, like he's right now, he's the first player on the team sheet, obviously.
Gusto, so, too, I'd say.
Yeah, so I mean, the treatment of those two guys is not like, you know, that's like the obvious thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like you have to just start him. Nico Jackson is also another guy I would put in that category.
You have to start him.
Yeah, but he, you know. He's just one of those guys, man. He had, like, in that first half, like, he had two moments that were just, like, the ultimate fucking, like, facepalm moments with the, like, losing the ball, dribbling in the box. Like, I saw a tweet saying that he was the only player who could tackle himself and get the ball off himself. Like, but, you know, I mean, obviously he came through with the header, which was, you know, something I thought I'd never see. That was awful defending by Brentford on Nico Jackson's goal. Like, I'm just happy that he got it on target because it was the easiest. I mean, obviously the ball by Gusto was fucking a peach, but terrible defending. Looked like Chelsea out there. But
yeah,
I don't know. Nico Jackson is just like he's an anomaly. He doesn't make sense.
So this is the point I want to make about Nico is because. You know, for a while now, I've kind of been teetering on the edge with him in terms of, do I like the guy or do I hate the guy? Because to quote Gattuso, it's sometimes it's a good, sometimes it's shit, right? And it feels like that way. Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit. Yeah.
I get it right.
That's what it feels like with Nico, right? It's like for every good thing that he does, or like, let's say, you know, he takes a man on 1v1 and that's the good part. but the finish is shit. Or the lead up to one of his goals is shit. Like, it's,
yeah,
he never has had like a consistently good game for us. I mean, even his hat trick against Spurs was probably the worst hat trick I've ever seen in my life. He could have had six. Just to finish my point quick, the thing I love about him and the reason why I decided I love Nico, it's because obviously he's a trier. The guy never gives up, but he has that fucking ego like that, you know, if you're in opposition, you're like, dude, that guy's a piece of shit. Like, you know, he's missing chances left, right, and center. He rounds the keeper, one of the worst misses of the season for him. And then he scores an incredible header and starts shushing the fans. You know, it's like that kind of attitude is kind of like that batshit crazy that you need with a center forward, right?
Yeah, and he's definitely like one of our number one hype men on the squad too. Every goal celebration, you got to take a look at him and DeSaucy. Like, those are the two guys you got to watch.
Is that the barometer now, though? Like, now that I'm thinking about it, it's just a thought that's out loud, but is the barometer now not, okay, the guy scores a fuck ton of goals, that's why we love him? The barometer's like, he tries and he cares about the team.
And he celebrates. He's funny to watch when he celebrates, when we score every once in a while. The other thing is, what was the point I was trying to make? Oh, that these flashes, I think that this kind of points to him in time, like developing and learning and becoming a better player. So I do have high hopes for him still. I think that he will become a good player, not, you know, a world beater or anything like that, but I think he'll become a key rotation player. I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, look, we still need a center forward. I think that's the bottom line, right? But I think with Nico, he does a lot of things really well. We didn't really see it in this match, but he does find himself in the right place at the right time quite often. It's his finishing that really lets him down. And he actually spoke on it, and they asked him about his goal tally, and he said, yeah, you know, I'm not really too thrilled about it. I mean, I'm not quoting him exactly, but the way I took his quote, just to summarize it, he said, yeah, you know, I'm scoring a little bit, but it should be way more. Like, I'm not too thrilled about that. And he kind of acknowledges that. And the fact that he knows, okay, you know, I've scored a couple goals here and there, but I should have way more. Like, I'm missing a lot of chances. The fact that he is admitting that, it kind of shows a little bit of maturity in terms of the way he thinks. Although sometimes on the pitch, he's fucking brain dead. Like, you know, he doesn't pick his head up when he dribbles sometimes. I'm looking at his stats here, Sam. He played the full 90. He only made 8 passes off 28 touches.
Nice.
So that kind of tells you a little bit about, you know, his performance. But also, to be fair to him and to, you know, I think it's a fair point. The guy's pretty much started every game that he's been available since AFCON. So he's played a lot of football, you know, in the last couple weeks. It's not like we had another forward that we can kind of stick up there and give him a rest, right? And
yeah, I think Nkunku's out too, so
he's going to keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope we don't run him ragged. That's my only concern with him. But all in all, I mean, this is a guy that I do want to see. This is a guy that I'm excited to see, like, what the future holds with him, because I do think there's something there that an elite footballer needs, and it's just kind of that fuck you, I'm going to do me attitude. Like, he really doesn't give a shit, and I love that. He doesn't give a shit in terms of what people think of him, I should say. Yeah. Definitely gives a shit, though. Mm-hmm. Halftime, Sam. I don't have the source of this stat, but I wrote it down in my phone when I saw it on Twitter. I should have fucking wrote down the source. So if it's yours, I'm sorry, I'm stealing it. In the first half, Chelsea are 8th in the league table. In the second half, 17th. So the question I had is the same question that Teslar 2011 had, aka Terry. Shout out to Terry, first time question. I don't know if it's a he or a she, but they ask, what does Poch say at halftime? Like, why the stark difference between the first half performance where we were up comfortably 1-0, probably should have been up 2 or 3. And then, you know, come the second half, Brentford's all over us, and all of a sudden we find ourselves down 2-1. What the fuck is Poch saying to this group?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, is he saying anything to them? Maybe he's drawing up stupid fucking set pieces where we pass the ball around like 2 times and then Cole Palmer shoots it straight into the wall. Like, that's probably what he's spending halftime drawing up and trying to figure out. I don't know. That set piece was a fucking joke. That was so funny.
They're all so stupid. It did not, like, come on, man. Here's my thing. Even if you tell the team, like, this halftime talk should have been very simple. It should have been, expect Brentford to be better in the second half. Now you have to raise your level a couple notches going into the second. Keep doing what you're doing, but finish your opportunities and be more clinical. That's it. It's a simple halftime talk. It's not like we're down 1-0 against a tactically brilliant side that's, you know, going to make all these tweaks and changes and, you know, and we got to kind of play the guessing game and deploy a tactic going into the second half that's just going to try to counter the tactic that we... It's none of that. The only difference is Brentford is going to play the long ball, get ready to defend it, get through the first 15 or 20 minutes, and finish your chances. That's it.
He's probably saying that, Zach. I mean, that's not anything too complex. Finish your chances. That's like as basic as a like a instruction you can give your team. Of course, he's been telling them that.
Well, if he really wanted us to finish our chances, he wouldn't have started with 2 attackers in this game against a fucking
reserve backline. That's a more important question than what is he saying to them at halftime.
Or let me start Cole Palmer in the position in an. Let's start our best available attacker in a position that he's completely unfamiliar in playing. Let's play him up top. Not out on the wing where he's been thriving for us all season. We'll play him up top. Oh, yeah, and Mudryk, yeah, he played well against Leeds. So you've earned yourself a spot on the bench. Good.
It's a good, like, actually, yeah. I like that idea, Zach. I like that.
God, he's such a fucking idiot, bro. I don't get it. I really don't. Waiting for Kendry has been asking some bangers lately. He kind of, like, I'm going to be honest, he kind of echoes my frustration with this team. Like, these are questions I would be asking. He says, every fucking game we come out worse in the second half. Poch castrates the team every halftime. It's infuriating. When should he go, now or the end of the season? I guess that's the golden question here. I don't think there's a solution right now if we sack Poch.
Yeah, end of the season for sure. Yeah. I'm not even, I mean, obviously I'm thinking about him, considering it, but I don't think that's a good idea. I really don't know what it'll take me, like what it'll take to convince me that he should leave this season, but there's just no reason. No, like, we're not going to bring anyone better right now.
Thought it was funny that the fans were chanting against him, because we all know that feeling, right? So I'm like, when the camera pans to our manager in the last, I would even argue towards the end of the first Lampard reign, they have that look of just doomsday. Like they know doomsday is coming. There's no coming back. Like they look like a dead man walking, basically.
And yeah, it's like Darvin Ham with his hands in his pocket type thing.
It's exactly like that. But it's kind of like we know what's going to happen. Like we know what's coming. And I think the Chelsea fans do also. But I think the more important point here, Sam, is when you get to that point where the fans are chanting against you, because this isn't the first time. You know, there were some Mourinho out people. His second stint, we all know the Rafa out people. We all know the Sarri out people, right? This has happened before. This is nothing new to Chelsea Football Club. Graham Potter, don't even get me started. That was probably one of the most toxic fan manager relationships out there. The boys gave everything. But is it at a point of no return now with Pochettino? It definitely feels like that for me in terms of the fan relationship with him.
No, Zach. I mean, we could. We are such a reactionary fan base, Zach. We are very reactionary. If we win the FA Cup, I promise you, everyone will be saying Pochin. Like, that's all it'll take. It's very simple. But
we'll play for penalties and we'll probably lose.
I'm just saying, in a hypothetical, like, and it is like, you know, the possibility is there, but not very high. But that's all, you know, that's what it's going to take. Like, if we finish the season, like, on a hot streak, like, you know, people start coming back from injury, we're starting to look like it's possible. Like, and again, I don't think it's very likely something like that'll happen, but it, you know, point of no return, it's still, I can still see it happen. Maybe.
What did you see? I mean, obviously the Todd Boehly is a C word chant that was going around, but I mean, that chant would have held more weight if Todd Boehly was actually at the game showing support for the team and not in fucking Bahrain for the opening F1 weekend. Does that piss you off a little bit?
No, I don't blame him. I'd rather be at the F1 race too. opening race of the season? Come on, bro. I can't turn that down.
Opening race of the season versus a must-win game in the Premier League.
How is it a must-win?
Every game is a must-win at this point for Pochettino. No. So.
Well, oh, for Pochettino, yes.
Yeah. If you really want to show support for your boy, you show up. You know what I mean? Like, if they're not going to sack him and they're going to back him, then you got to show your face at the matches, like, through good and bad, right?
Why? Like, I mean, dude, it's not like we back you, like, till the end of the season, no matter what. You know, like, we got your back. It's more like you got to prove yourself to us. You know, like, why do they have to be, like, there supporting him? Like, he's a grown man. He's the fucking manager. Like, it's up to him to prove that he deserves to stay to them. Like, you know what? They have to go to every single match the rest of the season because, like you said, every match is a must-win for Pochettino. But, yeah, cool. I would like it if he went to our games. That would be awesome. But I'm not pissed off about that.
I saw a tweet that I agreed with, and it said, you know, the fact that Boehly was at the F1 race and Iqbali was in the stands kind of shows you who's pulling the strings behind the scenes. Do you buy into any of that?
I do think that, I think it's kind of understood that Iqbali is more hands-on with the operations, you know, and because I've just seen that he is kind of like the hands-on guy. Boehly, obviously, I think is making the bigger decisions, final decision maker, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, you know, but, it seems like Iqbali is more like, you know, hands-on. So I'm not surprised. And, you know, just like all these rumors that come up, I think that, like, he is like the main actor in like certain decisions, you know? So I'm not surprised.
I actually believe that, though. You know, especially because Boehly's the one that told Tommy Tuchel to play a 4-4-3.
Hey, honestly, right now, even with a 4-4-3, we'd probably still lose with an extra man. Yeah,
even with an extra man, we'd still miss as many goals as we're missing now. I did want to spend a little bit of time talking about Poch's press conference because I have some points I want to make, some frustration I need to get out. A couple quotes that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, Sam. I'm not even going to lie. Just going to read through them really quickly, and then we'll kind of talk about them. But first one was, quote, "I think the performances have been very good. I'm so happy with the performances. If the fans want to listen, perfect. If not, what can I do? They'll keep booing. But I'm giving my best to this team. Boo me, not the players. It's fine."
Okay.
Next quote, "I don't want the fans trying to blame the players. I prefer that I get the blame and let the players be free on the pitch. I prefer me rather than to the team. I prefer that. I'm strong. I'm sure in time we'll change this perception." The last quote that pissed me off, quote, "We need to understand the fans are emotional. I'm fighting to provide the team with the best tools to work and improve and play in this way, score goals, and win games. That's after we played for penalties against the Liverpool C team in extra time of the Carabao Cup, and after we basically played a back five against Brentford with a 1-0 lead in the second half for a majority of the second half. Sam, tell me if I'm overreacting here.
I'll preemptively say yes, but go ahead.
I think Poch thinks we're fucking stupid. We're playing well. Really?
Okay, yeah, that's the bad part about the quote, yeah.
And then the other part is the hypocrisy of him saying all of this. Like, in the beginning of the season, saying all the right things, right? This is Chelsea. Chelsea needs to win games. Yes, it's a project, but we need to win. The target is to get to Europe, and we're going to win a lot of games this year, and we're going to change the, you know, Europe's perception of us, mm-hmm. and we're not going to look like this team in rebuild. And now, all of a sudden, not a single mention of winning. Nothing. The last quote says, "We'll work more to improve, score goals, and win games." Okay, let's score goals with two attackers instead of three or four, or even five. City plays with fucking five. Let's win games. Yeah, let's win game. Against who? You don't even try to win a game against the Liverpool C team in a cup final. So what games are we trying to win here? And then three, not a single mention of his standards not being good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's all he says is, don't blame the players, don't blame the players, don't blame the players. Blame me instead. The fans need to blame me, because they shouldn't blame the players. Well, how about you accept responsibility and say, blame me because I haven't been good enough as a manager. I haven't selected the right teams at times. I haven't made the right tactical adjustments at times.
Mm-hmm.
The last three, four results where we've dropped points have purely been on Poch. We almost lost against Leeds at home. You know, they had a guy who hasn't even scored a single goal in the championship this season. Score two goals against us, probably could have had three if he connected on that header that he had in like the 87th or 88th minute. What the fuck is this guy on? Like, at this point, the press conferences are just more infuriating than his tactics. Like, come on.
Well, I mean, look, I think right now, like, we have a pretty fragile team. So I get the idea of, you know, take away the blame that the fans are, you know, giving to the players and putting it on himself. But I agree with all of the rest of your points that, you know, like him saying, blame me for these issues, and then saying that I think the we're fans playing are emotional. Well, I'm giving my best to this team. Like, you know, like, it's, well, the fans are emotional. That's true.
No, but the way he's saying it is, the fans need to blame the players because they're emotional and they're blaming me. Like, fuck out of here. We're blaming you because you've been shit too. Like, it goes both ways. When has there ever been a total collapse at Chelsea Football Club where it's only been on the manager?
Yeah.
Or only been on the players? Like, it's a combination of, like, a bunch of things have to go wrong for it to get this bad. And for him to not even admit, hey, my team selection kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll improve on that. Maybe we shouldn't have played against penalties in the cup final. Maybe we shouldn't be so defensive going into second halves. Maybe we shouldn't be so timid in the second half of all these matches.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I need, like, to set the team up in a way to where we can score more goals, right, instead of just rinse and repeat.
You're rambling now. You're rambling. But it's the idea of, like, blame me, like, I'll take the blame, but I won't admit, like, mm-hmm. that I'm wrong, you know? So you can't have it both ways. You got to admit that you were wrong in order to be the martyr and say, blame me, I haven't done this right, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember in Mourinho's second stint when results stopped going our way, he said something along the lines of, yeah, the fans should be booing me because I haven't been good enough. Look at the results. think Poch needs to have that sort of mindset, not like, you know, kind of deflecting away from that. Man up and admit that you just haven't been good enough, and that just as much as these players need to improve, maybe you need to improve as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that we've kind of now gotten the culture of sacking managers as soon as it doesn't go well. Like, we've been through four in the last 2 years. And before that, I mean, that was also, I mean, it's not like that was a new practice that Boehly brought in. Like, we do this very often. So, so he always has to also think about himself, think about his job, you know, like, and saying then to admit that he's doing a bad job doesn't look good for his prospect of keeping his job, right? Like, and I'm not saying that what he's doing is the right thing. I'm just saying that's probably going into, like, you know, his reasoning of why he's saying stuff like this. And it's, you know, we're not going to give him a chance, but it's not like he's deserved a chance to, like, you know, stay with the team and build it for, you know, years. Like, it's just hasn't been, he hasn't done a great job.
I mean, are we really blaming the players though? Like, is he even right about that too? Like, yeah, we know that the players have
issues.
Well, there's some players that just flat out aren't good enough, but is that really their fault? I mean, we should be looking at the higher ups who decided to sell all of our experience and bring in these guys who aren't proven winners. Like, what do we really expect out of them? I'm not watching a game expecting Nico Jackson to play like Haaland or, you know, prime Ronaldo. You know, I'm going out there expecting him to fucking miss an open goal and dribble into someone's ass a couple times. Yeah. Like,
well,
you know,
that's why they chanted Todd Boehly's a cunt. That's why.
Maybe he is a cunt, like a little cunty. Maybe not full cunt, but, like, you know.
I'm not the biggest fan of his right now. I'll admit it.
Yeah, me neither.
It's all right, but it's still, like, for his tenure, it's still very early on. I can't make a decision. Poch, I'm a little, my timeline's a little bit shorter on making a determination of whether he should stay or not.
Yeah. John Anomics venting a little bit. Not really. He does have a question, but he said, just got nothing to say anymore. No joy watching my football club. We've fallen this far in less than 3 years since winning the Champions League. How bad we will be in another 3 years. Why don't they hire proper football people and let them run the club? I think that's a question we're all asking. Gary Corkin had a similar question. Shout out to Gary. I think this is a first-time question from him. He said, with the absolute clown in the boardroom making decisions, why sack the manager now and let them make another hasty decision that will fuck us just as bad? This is my mindset. Same. And this is exactly the way I'm thinking about things. It's like, okay, if you sack Poch, I know there's chance of Jose Mourinho and this and that. And I said it after the Wolves game. Yeah, maybe bring him in. But listen, there's what, like 11 games left? We're not getting into Europe. You know, sacking a manager right now and completely changing the philosophy, like, I think it would just be too drastic of a change this late in the season for it to have any sort of, like, tangible effect between now and the end of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you did this 5 or 6 games ago, or maybe even a month ago, okay, maybe there's enough time to turn things around, but...
No, I at no point during the season did I want that to happen. Like, it just, the market for a new manager is completely different in the summer than it is mid-season. Mm-hmm. Like, just doesn't make, like, you know, you find someone, you offer them the job, and then someone else becomes available over the summer, like... You know, oh, you already hired someone. I'd never really wanted that.
And I feel like we're going to have the same problem if we sack, let's say hypothetically we sack Poch tomorrow. We'll have the same problem tomorrow that we're going to have this summer. And that problem
we'll just
being,
have a caretaker.
Well, no, even beyond that, that problem is Barcelona, Bayern, Liverpool, they're all going to need new coaches.
Yeah.
So it's like, are you really going to bring in a top manager even now? Like, do you think a top manager is going to come into this Chelsea team instead of waiting this summer and maybe getting a phone call from Bayern or Barca, you know, or Liverpool? Like, who wouldn't want to take over that team at this point in time? Like, they're ready made for success. It's
so they're going to wait until those they they get the official no from them, because we're definitely a backup plan for a lot of these guys.
We're like plan D or E for a lot of these big coaches. Like, that's the bottom line.
MLS might be even more attractive.
Good Lord. Well, anyways,
Genonomics, his question or his tweet, you know, saying that just got nothing to say anymore, no joy in watching my club. Like, right before we were recording, I was scrolling through Instagram, and the clip of Eden Hazard's goal against Spurs, that won Leicester their title and took it away from Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, watching that, like, we weren't even in contention for, like, what did we finish that year? Like, fifth?
I think fourth? We finished fifth. Like, we were fighting to get into the top four, I remember.
Yeah, so, like, even then, like, with a underwhelming season, like, there was still, like, joy, like, in these guys, like, the whole clip, I don't know if people remember this, but, like, just as, like, exciting as the buildup and the goal was the initial tackle. Harry Kane was kind of on a breakaway, and then I think it was Gary Cahill and Oscar both slide in and just sandwich him, and they take the ball from off his feet. And I was like crying, thinking just like, oh my God, bring this back. Like, I'm so sad right now.
I know.
No joy anymore.
I know. That's the thing. There really is no joy in watching our team. I mean, we go 1-0 up against Brentford and my ass cheeks clench even tighter. Like, you know what I mean?
We gotta win the FA Cup, man. We have to do it.
We're not going to.
Zach.
I have no hope. I have no hope that we're gonna win a trophy this year. I have no hope that we're gonna get top four. I think that's too far gone. It's just, at this point, I think the only thing we have to look forward to are like those little moments of maybe Cole Palmer scoring or Malo Gusto getting an assist or Nico Jackson, you know, just going ape shit.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have moments like that, but I don't think we're going to have moments where we walk away feeling good about, you know, the team or us being like, yeah, we had a bad season. We'll be back next year. There's nothing in me right now that's thinking that way. Unless we go out and buy fucking Osimhen and then maybe, you know, like one other leader that's a veteran that's played, you know, in Europe, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't even think Osimhen's going to happen. It's just like, what do we got to look forward to, man? We got Newcastle. You don't think
Osimhen's going to happen?
I think it's a possibility. But in all honesty, if I was Osimhen, I wouldn't get near us with a 10-foot pole. Like, you're one of the best goal scorers in Europe right now. Why would you come to Chelsea at this point in time? It just, you know, the instability, the ownership, it just, I don't know. But he's a big Chelsea fan, and Drogba and Mikel have been secret agents, you know, doing their job this whole time. But we got Newcastle at home coming up on Monday. Wait.
But before we talk about this, I just wanted to bring up, like, have you seen the Clubs World Cup, the new competition that's going to be formed by FIFA starting next year?
Mm-hmm.
You know how, like, Chelsea is qualified already. You know that, right? Did you know that?
Well, we're going to treat that like Europe now?
I think it has the potential to be more important than Champions League.
I could see that.
Not yet, but I think it does. Yeah. But I'm just saying, that is what I have look forward to in 2025, because we're not going to qualify for Europe for next season. So we just need to be good by 2025 Clubs World Cup. That's the next thing that we have to look forward to.
Yeah.
We have time.
I guess that's the Chelsea that we've been used to as of late, like being a really good tournament team, right?
Yeah.
Like a, you know, especially domestic competitions. I mean, how many times have we gone to Wembley and lost? But generally speaking, we do pretty well domestically, just in terms of getting to the knockout phases or the later stages of those tournaments. So I know this isn't domestic, but it's a knockout tournament and we usually do well.
I'm excited for it. It's going to be, I think the way they're going to do it is like, it's going to be a league. No, I'm thinking of the Champions League there.
Oh yeah, their new format too. Yeah, they just want to sandwich more games. At least they didn't allow blue cards. Thank God.
I'm excited for this club's World Cup idea. I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, it should be cool. Newcastle at home coming up on Monday. We don't play this weekend, which is nice, so we can actually enjoy our weekends and not worry about Chelsea ruining it.
And also, it's on a work day, so which means I don't have to watch it.
You don't have to watch it live. You can just kind of, yeah. But look, I mean, I guess the bottom line is this. Just like the Brentford match, this, on paper at least, is a winnable match. Newcastle's only won 2 of their last 6. They recently lost 4-1 to Arsenal, but they bounced back. They did beat Wolves in the league 3-0 convincingly. A Wolves team that beat us 4-2 at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the big warning sign here, Sam, is that Alexander Isak is back and scoring goals. He scored against Wolves, and Gordon scored against Wolves as well, which, you know, those are 2 of their main attacking outlets. So if those guys are confident, we might be in a little bit of trouble. But they do have an injury problem. They got Callum Wilson, Joel Linton, and Nick Pope out. Those are all guys that would or should start for them when they are healthy. Sandro Tonali is still suspended as well, so he's obviously not going to be available for the rest of the season. But still, they can go out and deploy a pretty strong midfield, a solid back line, and again, they have a striker that actually knows how to put the ball in the back of the net. And a manager that actually knows how to manage, which is something that we don't have either.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel going into this? Should I even ask?
No, I mean, it's 2 teams that have been in awful form. So it's not like we're the team that's limping in. Like, they're also limping in. So
yeah,
I'm not too down on Chelsea's chances this match, but I don't expect us to win. But I think it could happen.
You sound like Pochettino. The team played well. But, you didn't lose. But yeah, we also didn't win.
Yeah, if we win, I want all the credit. If we lose, I want none of the blame.
Exactly.
I think Donald Trump said that.
I mean, he's not wrong in saying that, at least. He might be wrong about a lot of other things, but not that. Look, I'm going to go ahead and say I don't feel confident about winning this game. I think if we can nick a result, great. But I have a feeling that things could potentially get really ugly if we drop points at home. In terms of, you know, I think if we don't get a result in this match, the fans are really going to turn on Pochettino and they're really going to turn on the board, and it's going to be ugly from here on out. So I hope we win. I'm not even going to give a prediction because it won't be a good one. But
well, I mean, so do we go away from the back three?
No, I like the back three. I don't think the back three was the problem. I think it was just the way we deployed it and who we deployed in it. Like,
so 3-4-3 you?
I mean, yeah. I mean, play a more attacking team. Like, go out there and pin teams back and press and, you know, play that same way the entire 90, right? Like, don't go into a half and completely change your tactics and sit back and... Because the bottom line is we're not that team anymore where we can sit back and defend for 45 minutes and keep a clean sheet. We don't do that. We allow stupid chances. We give teams other chances. And it just seems like when one goal goes in, especially at the bridge, the energy of the fans and the players just drops off significantly. Like, it gets ugly fast. You know, there's no, you know, I feel like there's no coming back from it if, you know, if we concede first. But even if we go up 1-0 and another Brentford situation happens, look, you know, they won't just score 1. That's the problem. They're probably going to score 2 or 3. So, I don't know. I think if Pochettino decides, and I don't know who said it. I think it was, what was it? Waiting for Kendry? No. Somebody used the word castrating earlier in a question, and I think that's a great... you know, word to use, because that is what Pochettino does. If he doesn't castrate us in the second half and just continues to play that fearless, you know, high press, high line, maybe we can get after them and expose them a bit. But either way, back three, sure, I'd like to see more of it. I think that there's a lot of positive there, but I have a feeling Pochettino's going to revert right back to that 4-2-3-1 with, you know, Gallagher at the 10, and it's just going to be like a very bland Mudryk on the bench. Raheem Sterling will probably come back into the fold. Like, he's going to do something stupid that's just going to piss us off. It's a foregone conclusion.
Hey, I have a bold prediction. So, I don't know if you know this. Alexander Isak, he has 11 goals and 0 assists this season. And I think he's, like, one of the first players to have, whatever, 10-plus goals without an assist. And I don't know. I saw a stat along those lines. So, bold prediction, he gets his first assist against us. That's my...
I'll go one step further. I say Livramento puts in a man-of-a-match performance and makes us rue. Yeah, he plays.
Oh, yeah, he has been playing, yeah.
Yeah, he plays a lot. He doesn't start every game, but even if he doesn't start, he comes off the bench. Yeah. He's been good, man. But, yeah. I'm just super negative right now, so sue me. You know, it is what it is. Anyways, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. If you're still listening, make sure you're following us on Twitter at Blues on Parade. We do send out a questions tweet after every game, so make sure you're responding to it. We'll read it out on the podcast and discuss it just like we did this time around. So before we sign off, shout out to Gary Corkin, first time question. And then we also had another first time question from Terry. So shout out to you both. Thanks for asking. And come back for more. We'll shout you out some more. So until next week, keep the blue flag flying high.